And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With it till 3 on this Monday as we kickstart a week with plenty to get to over the next couple of hours. Coming up, the Gamecocks baseball season came to an end. So too did the season for LeBron James and the Lakers. Plus, Julio Jones officially on his way out of Atlanta. A couple of powerhouses in college basketball need to replace a couple of legends. And later on this afternoon, I'll let you know where I was right and where I was wrong about the first round of the NBA playoffs. Plus, what each of the losers in the first round need to do to get better. Major League Baseball with a couple of issues that they have to try to handle. One, they may have a solution for. Another, you can't do much about. Get to all that throughout the afternoon. Plus, Floyd Mayweather back in the ring over the weekend, and a whole lot more between now and 3. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. You can get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays, on Facebook, at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio at KirkmanBroadcasting.com or online at CharlestonSportsRadio.com. Head on over there, find our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted, or you can take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online at CharlestonSportsRadio.com. And with each passing day, we have more and more ways for you to listen to the show, more ways for you to stream the show. We'll talk about that throughout the afternoon. We now have an app. You can go find it this afternoon. Just search ESPN Charleston to download the official app. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Got a lot to do with you till 3 on this Monday afternoon. We were not on the air on Friday, so a bit of a long weekend for us, at least. Maybe not for you, but we're back today. Happy to be here. Looking forward to plenty to do over the next couple of hours. Right, turn me on, turn it up, turn me loose. We got plenty to do. Try to get all my thoughts in over the next 3 hours. But let me start with this. The Gamecocks baseball season came to an end over the weekend. Now, I picked them to win their regional, thinking they could get enough offense to be able to move on. And that was clearly a mistake. I should have known better than to trust this lineup. In the two losses, the Gamecocks hit 163. And yet, struck out in 43% of their at-bats. So, to make that a little bit easier to digest, that means that they got a hit 16% of the time, and they struck out 43% of the time, almost half of their at-bats. You can't win playoff games like that. You can't beat good teams, win big-time games. Look at the last 20 World Series champions at the Major League Baseball level. Right, stats, history, it's not as easy to access at the college level. But in Major League Baseball, go back and look. Last 20 World Series champions, almost every one was bottom 10 in the league in strikeouts in terms of fewest strikeouts. The majority of World Series champions still strike out amongst the lowest in the league. You can't win world, regardless of what analytics tell you. Right, those are regular season solutions. Because the regular season, especially in baseball, is so long. Over the stretch of 162 games, you'll win more than you'll lose playing that way. But come playoff time, when you're facing the better pitching staffs, and this is the same at the college level, when you're facing the better teams, better pitching staffs, it still comes down to the timely hitting. The Gamecocks did not have that. You can't just strike out and homer your way to championships at any level of baseball. You still need to put the ball in play. Look at the last World Series champions. Not only do they not strike out, they're good two-strike hitters. They're good two-out hitters. They get timely hitting. They hit well with runners in scoring position. It's not just, you know, grip it and rip it, hoping to hit enough home runs to win. And then There was the bad break yesterday for the Gamecocks as well, when they finally were putting together a rally in the seventh inning. And they had runners at first and second, nobody out, down just a run, and Satterfield hits that liner back to the mound. That's nothing but bad luck. The runners got hung up because they thought the pitcher caught it. Line drive back to the mound. It hits the pitcher's glove. At first, you think it's through for a base hit. Then you think he catches it. Then the ball lands on the mound, and you realize, oh, he didn't catch it. Or did he catch it? And then he dropped it. And the runners are going back and forth like they're in a pickle, right? Like they're an imaginary pickle between second and third and first and second. Like, do I take off? Do I go back? They're running back and forth. That's just bad luck. Nothing you could do there. The runners got hung up because they thought the pitcher caught it. Then he ends up dropping it. Turns into a perfect double play. You couldn't draw it up any better if you were Virginia. I mean, you'll see guys intentionally try to do that, intentionally on the infield. A soft humpback liner to the second baseman. And he does one of those where he guides the ball down to the dirt with his glove. He doesn't actually catch it. He possesses it just for a second and then lets it drop to his feet so he could scoop it up, flip it on a second, throw in a first for a double play. Right, but they'll get their ball, gloves on the ball and then let it drop to the dirt and keep it close to them. And that's what this was like. It was like perfectly done, except it wasn't intentional. The pitcher wasn't intentionally trying to deke the runners in order to turn a double play. Just simply bad luck for the Gamecocks, and it helped Virginia avoid a big inning. And they teach you to hit it right back up the middle. All right, that's good hitting. Hit it right back where it came from. A line drive over the mound like that, that's what you want to do. And probably 8 out of 10 times, I don't know what the data says, but probably 8 out of 10 times you hit it back up the middle like that, it's probably a hit. You hit it that hard, right back where it came from, usually the pitcher isn't getting a glove on it. And if he does, it's still going out into center field for a base hit. It was just bad luck for South Carolina. Now, Bill Parcells would tell you, you create your own luck. And the Gamecocks at times unable to get bunts down, struck out far too often, didn't get enough hits. That's kind of what happens when you rely on, you know, and one thing like that can do you in. When you're an offense that doesn't have enough wiggle room, that one mistake, you know, like when you fail to get a bunt down, you're like, oh, that was our opportunity. We needed to get those guys in scoring position. Now we can't drive them in. When you need to work that hard to scrape across runs, that one blunder, and it was a big blunder, right? It was a bad break. But when something like that happens and you don't have the offense to overcome it, right, you kind of create your own bad breaks. Both starters in the last two games, the two losses for the Gamecocks, the opposing starters set season high in strikeouts each time. Virginia's starter was making his second start of the year. He averaged about 6 walks per 9 innings. Wasn't very imposing, yet he only walked one yesterday. Virginia gets the win. And the Gamecocks won 13 straight regionals they hosted and now have lost 2 of the last 3. And I thought this was a great opportunity for them. At home, I liked the region they were with, Virginia, Old Dominion, winnable games. And then even if South Carolina was able to make it out of that regional, some things broke for them. They get to host as the 2 seed. They get Old Dominion, mid-major, as their 1. And even if they were able to get out of that regional, you'd have TCU, who was the host of the other regional, that got knocked out. They lost. You wouldn't have had to play the number 1 team from the other regional if you could get out of Columbia. Some things seemed to have broken their way, but the Gamecocks just still couldn't get the big hits. Mark Kingston was talking yesterday about the Gamecocks' loss and how emotional it is for South Carolina as their season came to an end yesterday in Columbia. Here was their head coach.
Yeah, I'm emotional because I care about these guys. You know, there's a love, there's a trust, there's a respect that has to go along with coaches and players. And as I mentioned, the last 2 years, what these guys have gone through is like, and we're not alone. I mean, we're not the only team that dealt with COVID and all the challenges of this year. We're not the only team, but this is our team. And I'm emotional because we care. And I told them after the game that the pain they feel right now, years from now, they'll realize it's a blessing because very few people get to be a part of something so special, get to be a part of a brotherhood that they care about so much. And if they didn't care, it wouldn't hurt so much right now. And so there were, you know, a lot of emotions in that locker room when we spoke after the game, but been doing this a long time. Those emotions come when guys are invested and they care. So that's why we're emotional.
Mark Kingston after the Gamecocks season came to an end yesterday. Now, Stephen Schock was the pitcher for Virginia who got the final outs. Then he tossed his glove out into the outfield afterwards. He's quite the character. Many have compared him to Kenny Powers. 6th-year pitcher for Virginia got the last final outs for Virginia to beat South Carolina. And they talked with Schock. They did an interview with him on the ACC network. Here were his thoughts after Virginia ended the Gamecocks season.
You walk into a stadium, 8,000 people, they all want you to lose. But as long as you got your 26 guys ready to kick butt, You're going to be all right. Sorry, I sweared. I shouldn't have
No,
sweared.
You're good, man. Let's go back to that last inning, ninth inning. What are the emotions like entering that inning?
Well, emotions are go in, win. I heard a fan offer free Dippin' Dots if I blew it, which the price of Dippin' Dots with inflation is just unreal. So for a brief moment, I was like, damn, Dippin' Dots sound good. But also, I thought in the back of my head, we win today, we win tomorrow, or tonight. We're going to be here another day. That's more per diem. So that means I can buy my own Dippin' Dots and be a winner. So it's like, you know, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to attack.
Does anything make you nervous?
Caves. Mainly. Nothing really. I mean, I don't see any caves out here. I know we're in the south. But it's not the desert. That's where I find most caves are probably at. But, you know, this is just a game. There's going to be way harder things in life than striking out the side or not walking somebody. So I don't really get too caught up in all the jibber-jabber and all the mean things people might say to me because it's just, you know, I think I'm a cool guy. My dogs think I'm awesome. My teammates like me. And my friends like me. So I'm going to attack. I'm going to win. Simple.
Here's one last one for you.
Yeah, no problem.
You've heard this before.
Yeah.
When people say Kenny Powers, what do you think?
I think, damn, I'm doing a good job. Because like I said, the dude took 86 to the big leagues after being out of the big leagues. You kidding me? You kidding me? He took that and turned it into a winner. So people are like, oh, Kenny Powers. I'm like, I mean, I might throw a little differently, a little firmer than he did after, you know, he started boozing and doing drugs. But, I mean, that probably won't be a big part of my life as it was his. But, hey, it's Kenny P. He's a winner. End of the day.
Steven Schock, Virginia's pitcher that closed things out against the Gamecocks yesterday, his thoughts on just about everything afterwards. Big Dippin' Dots fan, afraid of caves, and has been compared to Kenny Powers. Now, I will say, with that laid-back personality and what he had to say about, no, there's more important things than game, the reaction on the mound of throwing the glove afterwards would indicate, you know, a little more seriousness for him. But at least outside of the white lines, off the field, quite the character. Virginia able to celebrate the win yesterday, ending the Gamecock season. Let me shift to this. We weren't on the air Friday, so I've seen a lot of people's opinions on this. Let me give you mine. LeBron and the Lakers were eliminated in the first round of the playoffs. I do think that this affects his legacy, or at least is a stain, a bad look for LeBron James here towards the end of his career. Like, he left the bench early in Game 5. Then he didn't bother shaking hands with the Suns after Game 6 when they eliminated the Lakers from the playoffs. And in the postgame, afterwards, he was already promoting his Space Jam movie that comes out in July. I think these were all bad looks. It seemed like once Anthony Davis got hurt, LeBron didn't care. Or he realized the team wasn't good enough at that point to move forward and then no longer really cared. And now, since getting to L.A., year number one, didn't make the playoffs for the first time in about 15 years. Year number two, they won a championship, but it comes with an asterisk. And year number three, LeBron gets bounced in the first round for the first time. And on top of it, he was injured in two of those 3 years. He won last year when he had the break and the ability to rest up before the playoffs. This is now LeBron. He's 36, he's going to be banged up, and he can't carry the load on his own anymore. He can't be that guy in Cleveland 12 years ago, 15 years ago, that is carrying bad teams to championships. He needs more help. And I don't think he'll get another championship unless we have another bubble situation or some real star winds up in LA in the next couple of years. There are a lot of LeBron fans in the media. And they were all pointing out after this, oh, well, Michael Jordan lost in the first round 3 times. Right, LeBron, this was the first time, and it happened when he was 36, yada, yada, yada. It's always a lazy analysis when people who are getting paid to analyze things just present straw man arguments with zero context or nuance instead. Yes, Michael Jordan lost in the first round 3 times. Those were also his first 3 years in the league. LeBron didn't even make the playoffs his first 2 years in the league. So what would you rather have? Losing in the first round or not even getting there? Michael Jordan did not lose in the first round of a title defense. Additionally, go back and look at those 3 years. We're comparing something, A, from 35 years ago, when they used to play 5-game series in the first round. But nonetheless, if you want to compare those things, well, then, B, The Bulls lost to the number 2 seed Bucks that first year when the Bulls were under 500. Michael Jordan was a rookie. Then they lost to the number 1 seeded Celtics, who won 67 games and the NBA championship. And that was the year Michael Jordan was injured and missed most of the season. And then the third year, they lost to, again, the number 1 seeded Celtics, who made it to the NBA championship, while the Bulls were, again, under 500 all three seasons. And if you know anything about the NBA, you know that that series against Boston in his second year was one of the most incredible performances. It's when Larry Bird said that was, That was God disguised as Michael Jordan? Or maybe he said Jesus. One of the two. Disguised as Michael Jordan out there? I think he said God. Michael Jordan scored 49 points and then 63 points in back-to-back games in Boston to start that series against the eventual NBA champions. It's nowhere close to what we just saw. Right? The Lakers were favored to win this series. The Bulls were underdogs all 3 years. In fact, the Lakers were still the favorites to win the West heading into this NBA playoffs. They had a better roster, we believed, this year than when they actually won a year ago. And this loss makes last year's title more excusable. It shows that, maybe that had a little bit more to do with the unusual season, because three of the final four teams last year in the bubble are already out of the playoffs this year. I don't think you can just write this off. Many will excuse it. Right? Oh, he's 36. Anthony Davis was injured. Those are all fair. The Lakers were leading 2-1. Anthony Davis gets injured. The entire series changes. But let's not write it off as, well, Michael Jordan lost three times. Yeah, his first 3 years in the league. Not when he was the favorite to win the West defending an NBA title. Because last I checked, he only followed those up with more NBA championships. And then, of course, we get this classic after the series ends. I saw a story yesterday where, according to sources close to LeBron, he was only 80% in the series. Okay. Well, if you didn't say that during the series, if you didn't offer that during the series, don't bother offering it afterwards. It's like if you're interviewing for a job, and then you don't get the job, and you tell your friend, well, I didn't want that job anyways. Okay, well, if you didn't tell me that before they made their decision, then I'm not going to regard it. I'm going to throw it out. If you tell me while you're in the process of trying to get the job, like, yeah, I really don't care if I get this job. Okay, then I'll take you at your word. And when they turn you down and you come back to me and say, well, I didn't want that job, I'll say, yeah, you told me that before, right? When you were actually trying to get the job, you said you didn't really care. I buy it. But if you are going through the process of trying to get a job, the company does not hire you, and then you come back to me and say, well, I don't want that job anyways. Please. All right, that's just to help yourself feel better. For LeBron James, we know he was not 100% this year, but for this story to come out after the fact, not when they were leading 2-1, right? It wasn't like, hey, they're up 2-1 and LeBron's not feeling great. It was after they lost. And now we get the story, well, LeBron was only 80%. Okay, well, how about you tell us that during it instead of using it as an excuse after you lose? Steph Curry did the same thing when the Warriors blew that 3-1 lead to LeBron about 5 years ago. And then we got the story afterwards of, well, Steph wasn't more than 70% this postseason. Okay, well, why don't you tell us that during the playoffs until waiting until you lose 3-1, right, lose a series lead of 3-1, and then put that out there? Because while you were winning playoff games, didn't seem to be an issue. Then once you lose, well, you know, it wasn't 100%. And so if we want to play this game of LeBron being only 80%, well, apparently Steph Curry was only 70% when you beat him in the championship a couple of years ago. So what does that mean if you want to use this as an excuse? Well, LeBron James and the Lakers eliminated in the first round. And I don't think it's nothing. Not huge, because again, Anthony Davis is injured. They were going on the road to the 2 seed. LeBron is 36. Doesn't drastically alter his legacy. But it shouldn't be something that is just brushed off either. And I also think it makes last year's title a little more, you know, in question. Brings that asterisk forward a little bit. I think the Lakers needed to do something this year to vindicate or to prove last year's title was legitimate. But LeBron and the Lakers are at home, and now we get a bunch of teams in the Western Conference that haven't won an NBA championship before that will try to get their first this year. Julio Jones was finally traded. What does it mean for everyone involved? We'll get to that coming up. But, you know, every Monday at 8 a.m., the latest foursomes are released for our 2021 Summer Golf Tour. You can head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com for all the information or to get your latest foursome. 98.9 for a foursome at some of the best courses around each and every week. And, of course, today's has already sold out. Stono Ferry went on sale this morning at 8 a.m., went flying off the shelf, sold out very quickly. I was in here about 9:30. I was told, already gone. So you'll have to wait until next Monday, 8 a.m. for week 6 of the 2021 Summer Golf Tour. It'll be the Plantation course at Edisto next Monday. 8 a.m., Four Sums for 98.9 on CharlestonSportsRadio.com. In the meantime, you can get your information there while you wait until Monday. These things, they sells out in 30 minutes, so you better get ready. Get up early, get online, get your foursome. It's already sold out for this week. Coming up, Julio Jones was finally traded. What does it mean for all involved? I'll give you my winners and my losers from this whole thing. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, Julio Jones was finally traded. What does it mean for all involved, the winners and losers? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. You know the rules of the show around here. Anytime we get some Tom Petty, we have to listen to a little extra. Rules of the show. I don't make the rules. I just follow them. You know, it was kind of rainy over the weekend, I'll say that. We were off on Friday. I sat inside, watched a lot of baseball over the weekend. It was kind of nasty. A little rainy, at least where I live over the weekend. Columbia, I know, was, they had their rain delay. They got dumped on a little bit. Especially, I think it was Saturday when they got their rain as well. Around where I live, it's quite the thunderstorm. Friday night, maybe? Saturday night? I don't know. The days all blend together. Over the weekend, we also got Julio Jones traded, finally, out of Atlanta. Off to Tennessee for a second-round pick, and then the Falcons and Titans are going to swap a fourth-round and a sixth-round pick in the future. So, for the most part, essentially, a second-round draft pick. And it's pretty much what I thought the Falcons would or could get. I said, a second-round pick, probably a fourth or a fifth. Maybe you throw in a player as well. But you're looking at probably a second or a fourth round for Julio. And Tennessee was a team on my list, but not the number one team on my list that I thought should trade for Julio Jones. Winners and losers out of this deal. If you're a Falcons fan, it's not a happy day, but at least maybe you could put this behind you and start moving forward. The winners, I got a few of each. Obviously, the Titans are a winner in all this, but not by as much as you think. They're not as big of a winner as maybe you would imagine. Look, I would make this move if I was Tennessee. And I'd be excited if I'm a Titans fan. In fact, one of my best friends is a Titans fan. He was very excited over the weekend. That offense becomes very intriguing in Tennessee. You have Ryan Tannehill, who statistically has performed like a top 10 quarterback the last 2 years. You have Derrick Henry in the backfield, who led the league in rushing. You have A.J. Brown, who was a Pro Bowler. Now you had Julio Jones, a Pro Bowler as well. But the Titans also had a historically bad defense a year ago. They added Bud Dupree in the offseason, made a lot of moves on the defense, but there's still plenty of questions there. And according to Pro Football Focus, they had only the 15th-ranked offensive line a year ago. And they lost two of their top three pass catchers, hence the need for Julio Jones, and they lost their great offensive coordinator in Arthur Smith, now leading, oddly enough, the Atlanta Falcons. So they have some questions there. Sure, they have some good skill players in Tennessee, and we assume Julio Jones will remain healthy. That's the most important part. But the defense is going through a complete overhaul. They have a new offensive coordinator. Right? They still lost a couple of their pass catchers. They hope Julio will be healthy. And their odds in Vegas did not change at all after this trade, so it shows you what Vegas thinks of this move. That is not a real game changer for Tennessee. They obviously didn't get worse. I'll give up draft picks. If you have money to spend in the salary cap, I'll take on that money for a Julio Jones. I'm willing to take that risk. So the Titans are a winner. How big of a winner? We'll find out over the next about 8 months. Another winner, player empowerment in the NFL. Now, we've seen a lot of players try to wield their power more frequently. And Julio had the good fortune of the Falcons being in salary cap hell and the fact that the Falcons needed the relief. So they were a little more willing to move Julio Jones. Teams in the NFL still hold the power in these standoffs, a la Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson, Russell Wilson. Heck, Ben Roethlisberger just had to take a pay cut with Pittsburgh in order to stay there. A guy who's won Super Bowls, who you know, has been their quarterback for almost 20 years, and he had to take a pay cut. And he's trying to spin it to the media. Oh, yeah, I offered. No, you didn't. They asked, you obliged. So teams still hold the power in the NFL. But this is another example of a big name in the NFL forcing his way out of town and to a better team and getting that. And it will provide other players motivation or something to point to, or even just the idea that they too can do that. That the Aaron Rodgers sitting at home right now looks around and says, hey, you know, Julio forced his way out of town. I can force my way out of Green Bay as well. It's a win for the players in the league that are pushing the player empowerment. It's also a win for Todd Downing. Now, who's Todd Downing? He's the first-year offensive coordinator for the Titans, who have Super Bowl aspirations. That's why they make a move like this. And Downing fell flat on his face the first time he was an offensive coordinator. He got fired after 1 year. But now he has another weapon in Julio Jones. Obviously, he already has Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, A.J. Brown. Those guys are all big winners in this as well. And lastly, the other winner from this trade is the NFC South. I mean, if you're a Panthers fan, right? Falcons fans today are two local teams, Falcons, Panthers. If you're a Falcons fan, you wake up today sad. I would be. He's the greatest player in Falcons history. Just traded him away for a second-round pick. But if you're a Panthers fan, you wake up today, you should be happy. Now, Julio, you know, maybe he's on the back end of his career, 32 years old. You know, the Falcons and the Panthers, they're not necessarily competing with one another for division titles right now. But good. It's like, I don't have to deal with that guy anymore. Like, I look forward to the day I wake up as a Vikings fan and Aaron Rodgers is no longer on the Packers, whether he retires or he's traded or whatever it is. I can't wait for that day. Don't have to worry about that guy anymore. And Julio averaged 100 yards per game in divisional games in his career. He always did well against the NFC South. Remember when he had 300 yards on the Panthers a few years ago? And the Panthers have a young defense. The Buccaneers are trying to win a Super Bowl. The Saints defense may have to carry them this year. So it's one less weapon for those teams' defensive coordinators to have to worry about. Now, the losers in this trade. Number one, of course, the Atlanta Falcons. They just traded away their best player in franchise history for a second-round pick. I loved the Falcons' hires of Arthur Smith and Dean Pease, head coach and defensive coordinator. I even liked the hiring of Terry Fontenot to come be their GM. But their personnel decisions have left me puzzled this offseason. You gave Matt Ryan, you know, you adjusted his contract to try and keep him in Atlanta longer. Then in the draft, you passed up on a potential quarterback and went and got Kyle Pitts, a tight end. And then with all of that said, you trade away Julio Jones. Now, granted, Julio did not want to be there, but it was almost like a one foot in, one foot out type of deal. Right? Halfway committed. Are you trying to win now or are you trying to build for the future? But either way, you got to pick one. Flip a coin if you have to. You got to go all in one way or another. You can't try to play both sides. It doesn't work. You can't try to tread water these next couple of years, hoping to then tear it down in 2 years from now and build it back up again. You got to pick one or the other. And it seemed, up until this point, they're trying to win now. Let's extend Matt Ryan. Let's give him another pass catcher in Kyle Pitts. Let's work on this defense. But all at the same time, let's trade Julio Jones to get that money off our books, get some draft picks back, and try to rebuild in that sense. You're never going to get proper value for a player like Julio. So, of course, the Falcons have to come out a loser in this. They just got worse and less exciting, at least in the short term. That's not a win for Falcons fans. It's not a win for the organization. Maybe in the long term, maybe they end up drafting a great player in the second round with that pick, and 10 years from now we're saying, wow, that guy's really good. But right now, today, the Falcons are a loser in this. Arthur Blank, the owner, had said in the past that he wanted Julio Jones to be a Falcon for life. And now here he is at 32 going to play for another team. It's a sad day for Falcons fans. I've lived through it. I'm a Minnesota Vikings fan. When they traded Randy Moss, right, it sucked to see Randy go play for another team, especially when the Patriots were 16-0 and he was catching, you know, bombs down the field. It's like, man, that should, you know, that was our guy. He should still be in Minnesota. Even watching somebody like Adrian Peterson, the best running back the Vikings have had ever. Sorry, Chuck Foreman. But just watching Adrian still to this day playing elsewhere, it makes me kind of sad. You know, it's sad to see him in another uniform. I'm a Red Sox fan. To see Mookie Betts out in L.A. for the next 10 years, that's upsetting. He should have been our guy. He could have stayed with us. And those are all somewhat different situations. But when you have a Julio Jones as a Falcons fan, you would love to have him for life. You want him to play his entire career there. Then you retire the jersey, you honor him, all the good stuff. Now, he'll finish out the second half of his career in Tennessee. What if he goes and wins a Super Bowl somewhere else? As a Falcons fan, today is a sad day. The Falcons come out a loser in this. The second loser is Aaron Rodgers. Now, I will admit, I think it's pie in the sky to believe that the Packers would actually make a move like this, and it would help mend fences, and everybody would be happy, and they'd be singing Kumbaya, Aaron Rodgers, Julio Jones in Green Bay this year. But it could have been maybe the last chance or the best chance for the Packers to extend that olive branch. You bring in a Julio Jones, that should go a long way to try to make Aaron Rodgers happy. Maybe keep him around, give him another weapon. Plus, they were already 13-3 a year ago. Now you give Julio to Aaron Rodgers as well? I doubt the Falcons would trade him to an NFC team. We'll get more reports in the coming days of, oh, this team called, and this team offered this, and this team reached out. That stuff seems to come out after the fact. So we'll find out which teams the Falcons may have talked to, what the Falcons were interested in doing. Did the Packers at least pick up the phone? Because they should have. The Falcons probably said, no thanks, we want to get him to the AFC. But if I'm the Packers, I would have at least tried to get a Julio Jones. The Packers were number one on my list of teams that should have been most interested. Davante Adams, Julio Jones, Aaron Rodgers, right, with those running backs as well, already in the NFC title game a year ago, that would be interesting. And the third loser in all of this is the AFC. It's an arms race in the AFC to try to catch up or pass the Kansas City Chiefs. And so, there's kind of two schools of thought. You can either work on your defense and hope to be one of the very few teams to try to slow down the Chiefs with your defense, or you can work on your offense and just try to outscore them, beat them in a shootout. And so the Titans just added another weapon in Julio Jones to try to do that, try to outduel the Kansas City Chiefs, because the Titans, again, had a historically bad defense a year ago. The offensive line's not great. They lost their offensive coordinator, but they want another weapon in there to try to compete with the Chiefs. And so for the other teams in the AFC hoping to do the same, the Browns, the Ravens, the Bills, one of their competitors just got a little bit better on that offensive side of the football in the arms race to try to pass Mahomes and the Chiefs in the AFC. Winners and losers from the deal. It's a good move for the Titans. Does it put them over the top as a Super Bowl team? I don't think it has that big of an impact. Meanwhile, for the Falcons, unfortunately, regardless of what they did, they come out the loser in all this. It's a sad day for any sports fan or even organization when you have to trade away the best player you've ever had. And that's Julio for the Falcons. And you trade away that player for essentially just a second-round pick? The Falcons' hands were tied. That's the situation they were in. They kind of had to do it. Julio Jones goes on national TV and says, yeah, I'm out of there. You kind of had to. But it doesn't mean it doesn't hurt any less. It doesn't mean it doesn't suck to be a Falcons fan and see them get rid of Julio for essentially nothing. The Falcons come out as losers in this. You just hope that in the long term, you turn it into a win. Coming up, who could take a bigger step back? UNC basketball or Duke? Both teams have to replace a legend. We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, both Duke and UNC have to replace legendary coaches. Which program could have the best success doing so? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. You may know this song from Forrest Gump. Last week we were talking on the show of movies that would not work today with cell phones. I think Forrest Gump could be one of those. Instead of sitting there trying to find his way to wherever he was going, just Google it. He would find out. He was right around the corner from the street he was looking for instead of the lady telling him three quarters of the way through the movie.
Okay.
If Forrest could figure out, if he had a smartphone and could figure out how to use the Maps app. Another one I thought of over the weekend was Coming to America, because he would just Google Hakim, right, and see, oh, wait, he's a prince, right? He has his own money. When I say he has his own money, I mean the man has his own money. He would just Google that. That's what you do nowadays. You go out on a date with somebody, like, you know, what's up? Or even before you go out on the date with them, you want to see, what's this person all about? You look up their social media accounts, you Google them, looked at their LinkedIn. You do that, and you would see, oh, he's a, you know, he's a prince? Oh, this guy. He's got his own money. What is he doing working for the McDowell's? That was another one I thought of. Maybe Breakfast Club as well. At least wouldn't be made the same way. If you had phones today, everyone would just be sitting there on their phones instead of talking to one another and talking about, you know, who knows what, about how Molly Ringwald could put her lipstick on and all the other stuff. Who will take a bigger step back, UNC or Duke? Roy Williams announced his retirement this offseason. Coach K announced last week that he's going to retire, but he'll do so in a year. He'll coach one final year, which is a little bit awkward, but he'll have his last hurrah. We'll have a year of honoring Coach K, and then he'll step aside for John Shire. And these are two legendary programs that now have to replace legendary coaches. Which one could take a step back? Of course, it's not easy replacing a legend in anything, not just sports. If you follow up somebody at a successful business, right, it's never easy stepping into those big shoes. And if you look back at coaches in the sports world specifically, historically, the replacements usually have not fared well. Replacements for George Halas, Curly Lambeau, Vince Lombardi all lasted fewer than 4 years. They all also had losing records. Replacements for Connie Mack, Tommy Lasorda, Sparky Anderson, even Bobby Cox all lasted fewer than 4 years. Replacements for Red Auerbach, Phil Jackson, Pat Riley, Jerry Sloan all lasted fewer than 4 years. Bear Bryant's replacement lasted 4 years. Ron Zook failed after Steve Spurrier lasted fewer than 4 years. Even replacements for guys like Bill Snyder and Lloyd Carr and Pete Carroll, Phil Fulmer, Urban Meyer, Joe Paterno, Mac Brown lasted fewer than 4 years. And in college basketball, we had replacements for John Wooden, Dean Smith, Lou Olson, Eddie Sutton, all lasted fewer than 4 years. That seems to be the number, the special number, that if you can make it to year four, you're doing something right. You're there for the long term. But usually, the expectations are so high, the shoes are so big that that replacement needs to fill. You can't allow a slow start. You have to pick up exactly where that person left off. And if you don't, within about 3-4 years of saying, all right, this isn't going to work, you have to start winning immediately. And for a first-time coach, in the case of Duke, I mean, Hubert Davis is a first-time head coach as well, or will be, but at least he has a little more experience. John Shire's 33 years old, will be a first-time coach. For both of those guys, the expectations are going to be continue what the predecessor was doing, right? Have the same success as Roy Williams. Have the same success as Coach K. Most first-time coaches don't have those expectations. You don't take a coaching job at, pick any school, Kansas State, and immediately you say, okay, you have to be one of the best, from day one, you have to be one of the best programs in this sport. That's not how it usually works, but it does at these types of schools. And usually, it's not the replacement, but it's the replacement to the replacement that has success. I go back to Florida. He had Steve Spurrier. He's replaced by Ron Zook. That didn't work out, but then it led to Urban Meyer. Right? He had Curly Lambeau. His replacements didn't do much, but then eventually you wound up with Vince Lombardi. You had Dean Smith. Eventually you found your way to Roy Williams. He wasn't the very next coach hired. It took a few years. Then you found your next guy. Even the Jazz a little bit. You had Jerry Sloan, and then you had a couple of guys, and now he's not. It's not like you have a legendary coach. Right, but you found yourself, I mean, the Jazz were the number one seed this year. Right? They found themselves in Quinn Snyder, a pretty good coach. He didn't come right after Jerry Sloan. But now he's accomplishing some of the things Sloan did, you know, a few years later. And in the case of Duke, I compared John Shire to Matt Doherty last week for that reason. Right? Former player, questions about him as a coach, and it eventually led to the next legendary coach. That it wasn't that former player filling in, but after them. Then you found the right guy to lead that program. So which program can handle this change the best, Duke or UNC? Well, for Shire, he at least can now spend a year as an understudy to get ready for this job. He can spend his first year as the coach, essentially as the coach, with Coach K over his shoulder. I'm curious to see how Duke handles this. How much will Coach K step aside to help get ready, help get Shire ready? Or will this truly be Coach K is not going to change anything. He's going to be the coach 100%. And then at the end of the year, okay, now it's yours, kid. Or is this going to be a little bit of blending into Shire? That's certain things. Right? Now, I have to admit, I am watching Big Shot, the Disney Plus show with John Stamos, where he's coaching a high school girls basketball team. They hooked me in. We had one of the actresses from the show on this show a couple of weeks ago. And in that show, his name is Coach Korn. He's also a Coach K. and he's a former college basketball coach. He was winning national championships. Now he's coaching high school girls basketball. But as the series goes along, he gives some more responsibilities to his assistant to prepare her to take over once he goes back to college. And so she runs like the Monday practices. And she does a couple of more things now as the season goes on that she didn't do when he first got there. He's giving her more responsibility. Will Coach K do the same thing with Duke? Will John Shire run some things in practice? Will he be in charge of recruiting? I mean, he already was their big recruiter. Or will it simply be, hey, Coach K is going to say, this is my final year, right? I'm going to do it my way, and then once I'm done, it's your program. But nothing is going to change in the meantime. We'll find out. But also, by following in his footsteps, will you have to try to keep everything the same? You know, sometimes these guys need to go off on their own for those reasons, because they can go off and they can do it however they wish. They're not in the spotlight at Duke of, hey, well, this is how Coach K did it last year or for the last 40 years. Right? I have to keep on doing what he did, because if I don't and we don't have success, people are really going to come down on me. It'll look like a complete failure. Like, why did you change all the things that Coach K was doing? It worked so well for him. They set that precedent. You kind of just have to keep it going. So which one can handle it better? Well, compare the two programs. Duke, it's a private, small, academic school. A small arena, even though it's a legendary arena. And it's a program that has done nothing outside of Coach K. The program has been around for 116 years, Duke basketball. Yet Coach K has half of their victories. Duke is more about Coach K than it is the program brand or history. Without Coach K, there's none of that at Duke. He is Queens Boulevard. Meanwhile, UNC, they're a state school. And they have better sports programs. Baseball, football, basketball's right there. They're more invested in their sports. They also have the Michael Jordan connection, which will always be cool. I mean, he hasn't played at UNC in almost 40 years, and yet that's still a thrill. Like, wow, right? Michael Jordan's at the games, and they wear Michael Jordan brand, and oh, that's where Michael Jordan played. I want to be there. Those jerseys are cool in large part because of Michael Jordan. And UNC has won a national title with three different head coaches. UNC exists outside of Dean Smith or Roy Williams. Duke hasn't really existed outside of Coach K. They're going to have to try to now. And then lastly, compare the two coaches. Well, Hubert Davis played in the NBA. He's been an assistant for a decade. He's in his 50s. John Shire was never even all-conference at Duke. He's only 33, and he's also only worked for his former college coach. And if the two were in my living room recruiting my son, I'd feel more comfortable with my kid going to play for Hubert Davis. He played in the NBA, and then he worked covering the game for a number of years. Now he's worked as a coach for about a decade. He played at UNC. Now he's the head coach. John Shire has some of those things. John Shire's a former player. You know, he's been an assistant. He's coaching at the same place he went to school, so he knows what it's like to be a player there at that program. He's done a good job recruiting. But Hubert Davis has some advantages over Shire just on the resume. I think Duke takes a step back. As I said, I think Shire will be their Matt Doherty. He'll be there for a few years. Things won't work out. And then they'll go hunting for their big-time coach. Then they'll realize, okay, we got to get a big name in here, like UNC did. Right? We got to go get ourselves a Roy Williams. And Duke will find that guy in a couple of years. UCLA still has never replaced John Wooden. Bill Belichick will never be fully or truly replaced in New England. Phil Jackson still has never been replaced in Chicago, and I would say LA either. It took 30 years to finally replace Bear Bryant. And now that Nick Saban has done it, I don't think he'll ever be replaced by anyone. And Clemson will have the same issue once Dabo leaves or hangs it up. He is Clemson. Clemson is Dabo. Right, that's Duke basketball. Coach K is Duke basketball. UNC is more like Ohio State, where you've had a bunch of great coaches over the years who have been successful. You parade these guys in and out, and the program has always been good because the program impacts the coach more. But for Duke basketball, for Clemson football, the coaches in these cases impact the programs more. Now, Seth Greenberg was on a podcast with Dan Dakich, two former college basketball coaches. And Seth Greenberg was asked this, you know, did Duke make Coach K or did Coach K make Duke? Here's what Seth Greenberg had to say.
I think it was a great marriage. I'll tell you one thing. You know, Duke made Mike Shefsy because if it was in today's culture of college basketball, he would have been fired.
3 years.
He might not have gotten year four. He might not have. You never know. But
right.
I think that was a good marriage. I think that the evolution of Duke and the expectation of Duke and the consistency of Duke, Mike Krzyzewski created.
Seth Greenberg talking about Coach K. And then that last part, what he said is most important. Those expectations, that brand, that name, that was created by Coach K. He created Duke. When he arrived there 40 years ago, it wasn't the Duke that we know there, which is why I disagree with Greenberg's comments off the top that Coach K may not see a fourth year. Yes, in general, we have run out of patience in the sports world. Expectations are higher than ever before. But if there was no Coach K at Duke, and he was hired, say, today by Duke, like a John Shire is, well, Duke probably is not in this same position. They probably don't have those high expectations or history, because that was all brought to them by Coach K. And so he would be held to a different standard, I would imagine, at Duke if he never coached there previously, if they didn't have the last 40 years of Coach K's success. I grew up a UConn fan. It was very similar. Now, UConn wasn't much. They played in a crappy old gym. They were part of like the Patriot Conference. Jim Calhoun developed UConn, won national championships for him. And now suddenly it's like, well, UConn, right? When we talk about blue bloods, UConn's right there for college basketball. And every coach that comes in there, the expectation is, you know, win the conference and compete for national championships. But that wasn't the case a few years ago. Jim Calhoun made UConn. UConn did not make Jim Calhoun. Coach K made Duke. Duke did not make Coach K. But when it comes to UNC, much like in Ohio State, I mean, those programs influence the coaches more than the coaches influence the programs, because they already have those reputations, those histories, those brands developed. Clemson is more like Duke. Right? Dabo has made Clemson. And when Dabo leaves, they'll have a hard time replacing him, much like Duke will have a hard time replacing Coach K. John Shire, to me, I'll say it once again, is their Matt Doherty. I think he'll be there for a few years. It'll be a disappointment. He'll have some success, but not enough. And then they'll go big game hunting afterwards and say, well, that didn't work. We went with the former player route, 33-year-old, never coached before. Now we need a big-time coach. Maybe it's a Brad Stevens a few years from now. I don't know who would come to Duke. Everyone would be interested. Maybe you go get a different former player who's done it before. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch on demand, by the way, ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast, or find us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. You can find the show podcasted there. Hour 2 coming up next. When we come back, what each team in the NBA playoffs, each of the losers from the first round, need to do to get better. There seems to be one theme with all of them. Plus, where I was right and where I was wrong about the opening round of the playoffs. Hour 2 coming up next. It's the Mara Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.